Right, so let's talk about blindness as a theme. So we've just got blindness and justice to do with things. We haven't looked at nothingness, but nothingness is difficult to expand as a whole theme. We'll talk about it in passing a bit later. Not today, but a bit later. Okay, so blindness. Blindness is used in this play in two ways. Parallel, side by side. And we talked about this lots when we watched the film on the screen. We watched the Ian McKellen version. We have the juxtaposition of physical blindness and sight with metaphorical blindness and sight. Because of that, it's a theme that very much runs alongside wisdom and foolishness. We'll start with the kind of pivotal moment of this theme, of course, which is the blinding of Gloucester. Blinding of Gloucester is one of those scenes that once seen, particularly we see it on a stage, and when we go and see it in the theatre, in the cinema, although we won't actually see it in front of us, it's probably the next best thing to see it occurring live. It's a haunting and horrific moment. To even though we know it's fictional, we know it's not really happening, to see somebody be physically blinded like that is horrific. Is seen as the ultimate punishment at that moment. Short of death, Gloucester's blinding is seen as a horrific punishment. Of course, in that time, Shakespeare's time, Renaissance, Elizabethan England, to be blinded was to rob you of one of the most important senses you have. There, of course, no support for partially sighted, for blind, none of the infrastructure that exists today, none of the understanding that exists today. And if you were blind, either through birth or through accident or disease, that really robbed you of any opportunities for life. And more often than not, you'd become a beggar, or you'd be kind of thrust on the kindness of your family. When Gloucester's blinded, of course, his first instinct, I mean, partly because of his blinding and partly because he realises he's trusted the wrong son, but his first instinct is to be taken to the edge of a cliff to throw himself off. That's the effect that his blinding has on him. But of course, the play deals with sight and blindness on a much more profound level. And in a way, that physical blinding of Gloucester becomes a kind of symbol around which all of the other ideas of sight and blindness are hung on. We remember that blinding of Gloucester long after we've left the theatre, but it reminds us too of all of the other ideas of blinding and of blindness, sorry, and of sight that Shakespeare explores. And right from the very beginning of the play, Shakespeare references blindness, sight, again and again and again, and we'll look at some examples of that next time we meet. When Kent challenges Lear, he says, "See better, Lear." Because, of course, on a metaphorical level, what we have are characters who fail to see the truth and who are blinded. So Lear fails to see the truth of his daughters, doesn't he? He trusts the wrong daughters. He fails to see through the flattery of Goneril and Regan. And he fails to see through the plainness in her speech of Cordelia. And you could say, couldn't you, that he's blind to the truth. And what's he blinded by? Well, he's blinded by his pride. His hubris blinds him to the truth. Sorry, say it again. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that leads you into a whole discussion with Aristotle, and you pick up lots of context marks there. And then we have those characters who see clearly, it seems. So Kent, right at the beginning, seems to see clearly. As he tells Lear, see better, Lear. That's mirrored in the subplot by Gloucester. Again, blind to the truth, doesn't see clearly, blinded by Edmund's knavery and trickery. Of course, as the play goes, is those characters who start off blind metaphorically begin to see. Lear sees more clearly, and Gloucester sees more clearly. The irony, the, as I said, Gloucester's blinding becomes the kind of central point for this discussion, but the irony, the poetic irony, as Gloucester leaves to Dover blinded, when Edgar offers him a hand. Wherever he's going, Gloucester says, I stumbled when I saw. And that line kind of brings together the metaphor and the physical sense of blindness. When I actually could see, I stumbled, I didn't see clearly, but now I'm blinded. He says, I see feelingly. I see feelingly.
Gloucester says that,
yeah. And it's the irony of now he's physically blinded, it's enabled him to see on a more profound level, on a metaphorical sense, more clearly. And he sees his mistakes, he sees what he's done wrong, and he sees the way things really are. By the time we reach the end of the play, of course, everybody sees clearly. The truth has been revealed. The truth is open for all to see. But you could argue, couldn't you, that those characters who at the start seemed to see clearly, Gonal and Regan and Edmund, in the end are tricked by what they didn't see, that they were blind to the consequences of their actions. And they ended up turning on each other, and they were blind to that until it was too late, and they poisoned, stabbed each other, and Edmund had taken on a fight he never should have. So to kind of sum that up, because it's a thin theme, but there's lots of ideas you can explore off it. Blindness in the play, whether it's physical or metaphorical, is seen as a real disability. It's seen as both a dangerous and a kind of tragic place to find yourself, blind. And sight is something that's prized and that is seen as something of great value. When Gloucester loses his physical sight, it's seen as a great loss to him. And when characters gain their metaphorical sight, when they see clearly, when they can see the truth of things, then that's seen as something valuable for them to have learned and found. Just one note of context, because it's very relevant to Oedipus Rex, which we'll talk about very briefly now. But contextually and kind of mythologically, the myths of Shakespeare's time, as well as the myths of our own time, suggest that blindness leads to sight of a different sort. So people who are blind, we often talk about them having heightened senses, so their sense of hearing, of smell, are heightened. And prophets of mythology were often blind. Tiresias, who is a character, a mythological character in Oedipus Rex, Tiresias, is a blind prophet. And often in Greek and Roman mythology, as well as in other kind of myths, prophets, those who with the sight of seeing through the natural into the supernatural, were often described as blind because it enabled them, kind of closing off one sense, it opened up another sense. Okay, let's just very briefly, because we're going to be by form time minute, just talk about Oedipus Rex. As I said, Oedipus is not a play we're going to study in any depth because we don't need to. It's much more important that you know King Lear inside out, backwards, forwards. But we do need to know Oedipus Rex. It is our partner text. And what I'd like you to do over the Easter holidays is just to familiarise yourself with the story of Oedipus Rex. It's really short. My suggestion is this, that you look at Spark Notes. If you type in Oedipus the King, Rex is Latin for the king. So Oedipus the King in Spark Notes, it will give you a summary of the story. Now it's really important that you look at just the Oedipus the King sections. Oedipus Rex is part of a trilogy of plays and it sits in the middle. You only need to know the story of Oedipus Rex because it's a story that's self-contained. So if you go on to Spark Notes, if you type in Oedipus Spark Notes, you'll see summary for the first story, then Oedipus the Rex, and then Oedipus at Coriolanus. It's just the Oedipus the King summary you need. There, I think there are four of them. I've got it on the screen here. I'll just double check. Ignore Antigone, and then it's Oedipus the King, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sections on the Spark Notes, and what they do is they just give you a summary, and then underneath the summary, an analysis. Now, it's the summary I really want you to have, but read the analysis too, because it'll be useful. It'll only take you an hour to read it in total, probably less than that. Obviously, as you're reading the summary of Oedipus, you should be thinking of connections to King Lear, and there are plenty to be had, so look at those. If anybody wants to get hold of the full edition of the text, the extracts I'm going to give you after Easter will be from the Dover Thrift edition. It is available on Kindle for next to nothing. So if anybody's got a Kindle account and wants to get the Dover Thrift, I think it does cost something, but it's not very much at all, then you can get the Dover Thrift edition. But I'm going to be giving you the extracts that you need for that. By the end of today, let me turn this off.